everybody, and welcome to another episode of We Didn't Know How Good We Had It. And this week, I'm incredibly pleased to say that I'm joined by my good friend Tom from the band Goddamn. How are you doing, Tom?
I'm a good friend indeed. We've known each other for a long time, haven't we?
Yeah, and we are actually birthday buddies, aren't we?
We are, yes. Right, cool.
I remember seeing Goddamn supporting, I think it was Future of the Left or something, and it was on my birthday upstairs in the Institute. I think it was that show. No, Turbo Wolf. It was Turbo Wolf.
That was definitely Turbo Wolf. Well, you've definitely seen us play to five people, and you've definitely seen us play to a few more than that.
Yeah, just a few more than that. How have you been sort of over the last 12 months? I know it's sort of a horrible question to always ask people, but, you know, you've been pretty creative by the sound of it.
I mean, obviously, February, we managed to squeeze a tour in February 2020 just before the pandemic hit, and hit the UK, and we were all focusing on that live aspect, you know, like, oh, right, okay, we've just done this UK tour, and it was the best UK tour we've done. Like, you know, there was bar one show, it was all fucking Ramo, and people were going crazy, and it was, you know, felt like we were getting some kind of progression again after being away for so long, you know. And felt like people were thirsty for it, and then obviously everything came to a halt, and we just weren't prepared, weren't like, oh, let's sort out a live session, let's do this and this, because we were so focused on like the live aspect of it. We just kind of had to start and take a pause. And a lot of people always, I've heard a lot of people say that they kind of struggled writing in the pandemic, but I tend to do it in like, once I'm in the writing mode, I'll write an album, like,
yeah,
dead quick.
Like, so you get that zone really, and then you
just
sort of,
I'm like, there, yeah, yeah, I've got that ADD hyper focus kind of obsessive kind of nature. So as soon as I sunk my teeth into like, oh, here's a couple of ideas from here, here, and here, and I just sunk my teeth into it, and originally it was just like, we were just going to do an EP just to go, hey, we put a record out, COVID happened, here's an EP to just kind of keep the wheels turning.
Yeah.
But very quickly that EP just turned into an album. In fact, we sent something like 8 songs to the record label and going like, here's the EP, and they were like, can we release it as a record? So, and we were like, yeah, cool. Can we add a couple more songs that we like on it, you know? And it worked out great.
Fantastic. I mean, what's the sort of plan with that, and if you can, obviously?
Hopefully gonna come out this year. Obviously, the only thing that slowed it down is we're all sorted out around. We've got like music videos sorted, we've got all the artwork sorted, it's mastered and mixed. We've got Jonathan Nunez from a band called Torch to mix the record. We recorded ourselves. So it's going to come out this year, but the only thing that's holding it up is the press implants, because there's obviously like a backlog. And
yeah, a lot of people wanted to release stuff.
So,
yeah,
and then obviously there's going to be lots of people in a similar position like us, where, you know, if I've got any time, I'll write music. So hopefully this year press implants can get it back to us and stuff. So
awesome. I suppose like the thing about Goddamn for me is the live show. Like you said, that you work really hard on that. So I guess,
oh well, yeah, here's the other thing in the pandemic. James, who was a keys player and an additional guitarist in the band, he left the band. He wanted to do more stuff with Mutes, and he was, you know, I think he was a bit down about, you know, being like a really high point with Goddamn and then it all stopping. I think that kind of affected him, and he basically said, you know, I can't promise I'm gonna be around for Goddamn. And I think he was concerned about going back into the pits of, you know, spending 2 years sitting around and not doing anything.
Waiting for records and stuff like that.
Waiting for a record to come out. And I think he was on a real downer of it. And he said, you know, if you need to find the replacement for me, you've got my blessings. And and he wanted to do Mutes, and he wanted to do his things that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
That wasn't Goddamn. So we got somebody else, and we've got a new keys player called Hannah Alshamari, who's or Shemri. Sorry, I said it wrong. Well, Shemri's got more of a ring to it. And she's been great. She's been like emotional, spiritual, artistic advisor. She's just like an absolute facilitator and like eggs you on for certain things. And yeah. She's really brought a lot to the table. So it's been great having that. Having a female in the band. I haven't had a female been in a band with a female since my high school band. Like little drummer that I'll end up like being all horrible and fell out and stuff. And I was like, you know. And they definitely got to a point with Goddamn where it was like, it felt like that we were grown up enough and it was the right move to get. Well, Hannah was the right person to join the band, but having a female in the band is you have to be mature enough, I think, for that a lot of the time. We were just at that point where she's just brought so much great energy to the band, and then that female energy is just like brought out like a real spiritual, artistic kind of creative side to us that was. We didn't realize was missing.
Well, because you're pretty hard hitting in Ash's sense, I guess, really like quite literally, but also the music, it's not very forgiving in a good way, if you know what I mean. And I suppose just having someone new in a band, that this is something I had in a discussion with Damien from St. Pierre, like having someone new come in the band can give you a whole another level of energy, regardless of what instrument they play or what role they play in it. Yeah. So did you find that? With Hannah?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think with James, we kind of had that like at the drive-in, like things might.
Because James
wrong
can play everything, basically, can't he?
James is a polymath. Like he's like, you know, James is he's just a ball of energy in every aspect of it, you know. And you know, with the James thing, it would be like he would jump off some speakers but then shit might go wrong.
you need a little bit of a tether, I guess.
Accidentally pull his guitar cable out and pull down a stack or whatever. And I think with Hannah in the band, it's kind of like
she's gonna be sensible, basically, is what you're saying.
No, I think it's just I didn't want to replace James with another James.
That's fair. Yeah, I can understand.
I think I wanted Hannah to bring Hannah to the table.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And Hannah is, you know, she's just cool as fuck. Like, we're way cooler now as a band for having Hannah.
Awesome.
For having Hannah in there, you know. I'm not gonna lie. You know, she's cool as fuck, and she's great to watch play, and she's, you know. She's got, like, that massively distracted and then, like, extreme hyper-focus thing. We've got Rob as well. Sorry.
I was chatting to you about Rob the other day, wasn't I? Because I think I sent you a couple of pictures from Wet Nuns gig that I went to very long time. What a fantastic band. That's another band I hope someone will bring up at this podcast at some point.
Well, but... Wet Nuns. Oh, shit. Can we talk about Wet Nuns?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that band. I remember seeing a fantastic picture of Matt Helders from Arctic Monkeys in LA Airport wearing a Wet Nuns t-shirt while the nuns walk behind him. And you're like, they've made it, lads. They've made it.
But... Yeah. I think Rob was good mates with Helders. I think I remember seeing Helders wearing a Wet Nuns t-shirt, Glastonbury or something. Rob, long-time friend. I've known him since Goddamn played with Wet Nuns, and I used to go and see Wet Nuns as a fan before Goddamn played with them. And it was always one of those things where I remember we did that album in Sheffield with Ross Orton, and he played on it a lot. And I remember saying to him, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do a bunch of touring. I think we've got like Red Fang and Carter and stuff. And I was like, you're going to come and join the band for some shows and stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And then it came to the point where I was like, this was before that. There was definitely a point where I said to him, oh, so do you want to come and play with Goddamn then? He was like, I can't. And I was like, you've joined Drenge. Right, okay.
Yeah, that's a fair.
And we're really good friends with Drenge.
Yeah.
And now he's playing for Working Men's Club, and we took him on tour. We took Baba Naga, his other band, on tour.
Fantastic band as well. That's amazing. I saw them supporting Pulled Apart by Horses November before last at Le Pub, and was properly blown away by them. I think Rob...
They're great. Rob probably wasn't in the band during that time, I think. And I saw them on the Horrors, they did the Horrors tour as well, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was going to say, if there was someone, if you were to ask me to pick somebody in the UK music scene that fits with Goddamn, it would have been Rob anyway, because
I know, yeah,
it's almost like too obvious, if that makes sense. So it's a fantastic musician.
He's always I remember having somebody took a photo of us just hanging out at a festival in Reading and Leeds, and somebody commented, "So Rob's in the band then?"
You're like, oh, God, so like, yeah,
and everybody's always said Rob needs to join the band, and Rob has always been a member of Goddamn. And like I said, Mr. James of the day, it's like James rang me up drunk and was like, "Oh, I regret leaving Goddamn." I was like, "Mate, you haven't really left Goddamn.
Yeah.
Not, you know, it's not ever saying, you know, you can't play again." And it's like with Rob, Rob's going to play some shows, but then there's some shows where he can't play because he's doing working men's club shows. And obviously working men's club are paying his fucking bills.
They're doing okay, aren't they?
Yeah. So I'm just going to be, I'm just... You know,
it's like, right from the off, can we just borrow Rob for a bit, please?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a bit of both there, isn't it? With Drenge as well, and like, I remember, you know, it's an open door policy.
That's it. If anyone wants to join Goddamn, just message Tom. There'll be a
no.
You'll be like the polyphonic spree by the end of the year.
Well, yeah, we've talked about that. I mean, I think somebody referred to us as the Melvins of the Midlands, where, you know, as long as it's me and Ash playing, then it'll be Goddamn. And we can certainly, you know, at the drop of a hat, we could do a two-piece show. But the core of
kind of where it sort of started from, really. Well, obviously,
yeah,
forgetting just a little bit of it, but you did do a lot as a two-piece for a while. I remember the Christmas show with them Wolves at the Flapper, you and Ash. And,
I mean, we had Dave Copson, obviously, start was a founding member of the band, but actually the very first Goddamn show we ever played was a two-piece.
I suppose if you can do what you do as two people, if you can do what you do as two people, like the amount, I say the level of volume, but the level of craftsmanship and everything that comes with it, bringing more people into it just takes it up even higher. So like,
yeah,
I think you've got the perfect core.
I think there's a band I love called Liars who, when the time that we played with Liars, it was Wet Nuns were supporting them. In Pints and Festival anyway. I'd seen Liars a few times and they might have 10 people on stage and they might have 3 people on stage, you know. I think the very much the core of the band is the 3 of us. And we're going to do as many shows with Rob as we can. And Rob features across the new record.
Yeah.
It's all over the new record. And he's in, you know, we've got press shots with him and stuff like that. So Rob is very much a part of the band, but I prefer it to be 3-piece.
Yeah.
But we can do a 2-piece show and it'll still be a different kind of fun, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, the 4-piece versions, we just put some Go Faster Strikes on it and a turbocharger or something like that.
Nice.
You know, it's still, just we still get to work in it if the Go Faster Strikes aren't there, you know? So it's,
But, first of all, I should really say thank you for joining me. I've already forgot to mention that. I should have done it straight away. But thank you for also giving me a great list of acts for us to talk about. For anyone who hasn't listened to the podcast yet and this is your first time listening, the deal with this is I'm going to chat with Tom about 4 bands that are no longer together that he either misses or they've influenced him in some way, whether it comes to writing or performing or anything really. Mm-hmm. But we'll just sort of get right into it.
Well, I think what I did with this as well is I was confused by your message about it. I was like, this sounds fucking ace. Like, I'd love to nerd out about this. But I think with my list, it's like bands that don't exist anymore. And I have seen them in venues that don't exist as well.
You had the double level to this.
Yeah.
Like, thought about it more than I did.
Well, I was like, I think he means that. I can do that. I can definitely do that.
You definitely did that.
And then I was like, oh, I've got the wrong end of the stick. And I was like, no, still going to go with bands that don't exist anymore that I've seen in venues that don't exist anymore.
And it's even better because I sat there thinking, oh, he's probably really busy. It's going to take him a good couple of days at least to try and come up with this list. And Tom messaged me back within about 6 minutes, I think it was, with like a band and a venue. And I was like, well, here we go then. Let's do this.
You know what, mate? I mean, I love playing in a band, but I love going to see bands just as much as I love playing in a band. I have had moments of euphoria, as many moments of euphoria and like intense like love and connection to the universe. Sounds fucking hippie, but it's true. Watching bands, I've had that more often watching bands than I have playing my own shows. And playing my own shows is a very visceral, like engaging thing.
Yeah.
But when you're watching a band and they're fucking great, you just go like, you lose all your, it's like taking the good drugs or something. You like, you have that ego death, don't you? When you watch a band, you go like, this isn't about me and this is not about them. This is about like, we've got this fucking moment in time, which is really powerful. I think that, you know, that ego death thing of watching a band and enjoying the show is just, it's just like that pure connective tissue shit, you know?
So amazing. That's my clip, that is. I'm using that for everyone else to say it every week. I've got to have a clip, and I think that was it. But yeah. Let's get into it. You go ahead, pick a band. One of these, the four acts that you picked, and we'll just go.
Did I pick Monotonic, Selfish Cunt, and
the Mars Volta,
and Blackfish.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. Okay. So the one that we're going to talk, we're going to spend ages on. We're going to spend an hour talking about Blackfish, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Probably.
So the first time I saw Blackfish was with my old band, Your Biggest Fan Club, and we were playing. There's layers to the story. We were playing Planet in Wolverhampton. Have you been to Planet in Wolverhampton?
No. I can't say I frequented Wolverhampton as
proper, often. Proper. You know the film Blade.
Yeah.
They're in the nightclub, and it's like rainy blood, and it kills everybody. Right. That's that nightclub. That's Planet. Right.
Nice.
Proper Grebo. Bill, right? Leather jacket, kind of long leather, like full-on Grebo, not like making it up Grebo, actual full-on Grebo. They've got a mosh pit upstairs, which is like, I think it's a hexagon. It's like literally a sunken bit of the venue for moshing.
Nice.
I don't know, somebody thought enough. Like that was a good idea, right? Literally a mosh pit.
Let's give them something to trip over when they're spinning around.
Yeah, I know, right? But it was like proper dingy sticks the floor place. Anyway, they used to put gigs on there. I think Mike Conroy was on sound that night. Do you know Mike Conroy? Yeah.
Did a few shows at the Rainbow with Mike, which I suppose is another venue we might talk about a little bit later on.
And Raya from It's Just Noise, and I think she works for Glee Club now. Mm-hmm. She was booking that show, and I remember her being, I didn't know her that well, but I remember her being pissed off because she was like, "You got any guest lists?" And I was like, "Not many people come to the show," so she was like, she was annoyed. there was a sigh of like, oh.
It's one of these guys.
One of those nights as well. I think we played, I think Bridge 55 was headlining, and it was one of our really good friends, Rich Campbell, his band. And they were like this indie band. And it was us, my band, my old band, The Biggest Fan Club, and Blackfish. And there was just like people's like girlfriends and moms there that kind of gave away. There was these four guys just watching us, just like, just being like, narcs or whatever, watching us at the start of our show, like watching the whole of our show and really digging it. And I was like, okay, great, who are these guys? And they're from this band called Blackfish. And Tom from Blackfish, he's actually now a primary school teacher.
Yeah.
he leant over afterwards and was getting like his pedals out and says, "You guys are really good. We really like you." And we start talking about different music, and he says, "You're gonna love what we're doing now." And I was like, "All right, dickhead. All right, mate. Thanks." Like, I just like spooned in a compliment so you can say that your band's great.
You thought that was good. Watch this.
Exactly. That's what was happening. And I was like, and then
for those who couldn't hear that, if I haven't turned it up, there was an offensive word said there.
Yeah. So it's a good job. I'm not teaching at the minute, so I can swear and talk about drugs.
Oh yeah, it's fine. You're live on Channel 4. Swear as much as you.
Anyway, I go under a different name when I'm teaching. Anyway, so So what was I going to say? There comes my next HR interview. No. So yeah, they're setting up. And I was like, oh, it's a band called Blackfish. They're really good. And they fucking ripped my skull off. Like, I was like, oh my God, what is this? This is music, you know? And, you know, I was into the Locust and stuff, but I'd never seen the Locust. And, you know, I was, you know, Dillinger and stuff. But like, to see that kind of band, and it's just some random band from fucking Sutton.
Just down the road, like,
you know, and like, being like, oh my God. And like, nobody, and they, Blackfish always played better when there was fucking nobody there. Like, and I
that's think what that, the chat I did with Ben Forrester a couple of weeks back, if anyone's caught up with
that. Oh, is it many a show, many a Blackfish show with Ben Forrester?
He said exactly the same thing that you did, where it's like, you go and see Blackfish, whether it's the first time or the 100th time, but you're going to get excited. Like, you kind of know after the first time, you know what you're getting yourself in for. Same with a lot of bands, I guess, that have that on stage antics sort of side to it, like early Pulled Apart by Horses and things like that, where you know it could just kick off at any moment, and it tends to. But you're going to be excited. And I think he used the phrase, you're going to want to rock out with him, which I have recorded, and I'm going to keep on a loop forever because he's embarrassed about using the phrase rock out. But that's exactly what
Black I mean, it was kind of, they would, I mean, Wiz had these like enormously long arms that would just be like, he would be like fucking Spider playing his kit, and it just like destroy the fuck out of this kit. And then you'd get Sam Manville, who's obviously got he's got his like acoustic-y shit now, you know,
the nice side of Sam Manville.
Well, it was really nice. and they just fucking just destroy the place. And I remember him jumping on the drum kit, and the drum kit going like, with its fucking hoop on, the drum kit going like that when he jumped on the drum kit.
Like.
And it was Bridge 55's drum kit, and they're fucking like somebody's dad or something, and the band come like racing forward, like challenging him, going like, don't you fucking do that, like, dare you fucking jump on somebody else's fucking drum kit, you know, or something like that. And I was just like, this is even better.
Get the family involved.
And of course, you know, we end up playing a bunch of shows with Blackfish, and they open the door to a bunch of other bands. They open the door to Youths and Mirror Mirror, who are great local bands. Mike, who's in Boats Row, and Roller Tomasi, and that whole, they opened the door for me to that whole UK math scene that was going on at the time, which I get, like Ben was saying, and like no fucker went to those shows, and everybody talks about it. Everybody goes like, oh, I fucking love Blackfish, I fucking love Tube Lord. Oh, really? You weren't? Nobody was at those fucking shows. Like, it was like, and they're all like saying it was the best shit ever. And there's like Facebook groups like about this math rock scene, you know. And it's like, nobody was fucking at those shows. And they were, and I was like, they're going like, this is the worst thing in the world. But also the fact that no fucker understands this. But also it gave me all the strength I needed, because these bands were just killing it every night, whether people were there or not. And I've seen them play in front of people, and I've seen him play in front of nobody. And that gave me all, that was my lesson in punk rock, as visceral as it gets. Like, my lesson of, doesn't fucking matter. And it's that Fugazi mentality of like, you just put on your best fucking shit.
Yeah, all the time, every time.
All the time, maximum effort all the time. And I mean, I hope, they'll probably get back together. I'm guessing they're going to do like the 2000 Trees thing or some
art. Oh, I would absolutely. That's why ArcTension are holding off that Friday night headliner slot, I believe.
Right. Okay.
Just for Blackfish. Yeah. I'll just pretend I know James Scarlett.
They're going to play to some fucking people that night, because
I think they'll play to people and it'll be rubbish. I know what they're doing. I'm guessing Wiz and Tom and Rich and Sam aren't going to listen to this anyway, because no one cares about listening to stuff that I have to say anyway. But if they are, me and Tom want you back more than anything.
So. Well, oh God, fucking hell. Like, and you and I were really,
I love and you and I.
We're really like, they kind of honed some little avenues that Blackfish maybe didn't develop on so much. Because Blackfish kind of did that, didn't they? They kind of went like,
all this
here's,
you know.
Here's everything at the same time.
But. Yeah, and then whereas Anu and I went, nah, we're going to do like these things really good. Like,
I think I have the record for bringing Anu and I out of retirement 4 times.
Right.
Every time I ever did a show at the Flapper, whether it was a Christmas show or whether we were trying to do off the cuff or just a day festival or something, I'd just be straight on the phone to Tom and be like, so Anu and I are still playing. He goes, oh, we haven't rehearsed in like, you know, 9 months. So yeah, that's fine then. Cool. Here's a fee. And then I'd make sure that I got them down in it. But I fucking love that band. All those guys as well. Like I was lucky enough to put Sam on doing his solo thing down here in Cardiff year before last. And it was something I never imagined I'd get the opportunity to do, having Sam Manville add me on Facebook and send me a message and say, hi, would you like to put me on for a show? I was like shaking, like dropping my phone on the floor, like, this is new. But yeah.
I mean, they're heroes of mine. They really are. And they really took your biggest fan club, my old band, under their wing and opened up a world to us.
Well, what's great is you listed that the specific show that you want to talk about was seeing them at the Little Civic, aside from playing with them, but that's another venue.
Right,
is
okay.
It still there out of interest? Because, I haven't been to Wolverhampton in a long time.
I could have said either Planet or Little Civic. Planet is still going.
Okay. So that's out the window.
I wanted to keep it within the theme. So the first time I saw them was at Planet, mm-hmm. but I'd seen them. I saw there was a gig with them, Roller Tomasi and Hughes at the Little Civic.
What a lineup.
I would pay at least £50 for that right now. to see that early Rollo lineup. You two were fucking great. And Blackfish in there just after the, you know, the EP called Gold or something like that. Which was just they were like kind of ropey punk rock recordings and stuff. They were fucking great. So I remember seeing them there and I missed that venue. Again, that venue was my CBGBs growing up, you know.
Nice, yeah.
All I wanted to do as a kid was play. Am I pointing the microphone at the fucking thing here? All I wanted to do as a kid was play the Little Civic. That was my only goal, was to play the Little Civic. And it was post, you know, like we say, my CBGBs, it literally was. There was posters on the wall. You'd walk to get to the toilet. You'd walk past the stage. You know, like the stage was here and the bogs were right there. So, like, you know, if you were going for a shit during the band, people would know because you'd be in there
for longer than you should be.
Because they're either doing cocaine or some kind of drug, or they're taking a shit, you know. And like, I remember playing.
Not sure which
it,
one's
like,
more embarrassing.
Definitely the cocaine. And the you know, you'd be playing as a band, and the door would open, and it'd be like wafts of shit coming through. You know, or just think of piss. But yeah, that was that proper punk rock venue. And if I could go back in time and experience a gig of my youth, it would be that show with Blackfish there. And you know, you could, it was the barrier was right next to the stage, so you used to be able to, like, if you were a flighty young person in a band, you used to be able to like walk across the barrier and stuff, and it was just a great show. And Blackfish is always like just ripped your fucking skull off, and you'd go, what the hell was going on? And I think there was a period of time where they didn't use any pedals, you know, and they put on, you know, it was all just like volume knobs and stuff, a bit like how Heck did, you know, later on. And it was just like, this is all you need for carnage to happen, is just guitar
volume,
guitar amp, and your mates, you know. So it's and the thing is that what happened after that is, you know, whenever I see a math rock band now, and I, you know, I love new artists like Black Midi and stuff, but whenever I see a math rock band, I always think back to that time when no fucker was into that music, you know. And I think those bands were fucking better, you know,
the new bands kind of want to be, and not in a disrespectful way to say that these bands aren't good, but you know, they look at Roland Tomasi, they look at Youth Movies and stuff,
but that talent at that time in that math rock scene was just off the scale, just completely, just that like fusing of telepathy kind of between artists and stuff, and it was like those bands were like, you stick on a Locust record and you go and see the Locust and they kind of sound a bit like it live, right? Those bands were like, the Locust were tight as fuck, and they would, and the UK scene was full of them. And again, like Roller Tomasi, I remember seeing Roller Tomasi, they were babies and they were playing this like angular, crazy Mr. Bungle on speed shit, you know? And you just be like, this is the most accomplished stuff you will see, you know? And there was still the punk. It wasn't like prog showing off stuff. It was punk rock. You know? It was a thousand more notes. Yeah, in my punk rock venue, people go like, "This is the pinnacle," and no fuckers watching. You know, and thankfully that, you know, they did influence a lot of people. I guess it was that kind of, you know, people at the early Sex Pistols, I'm fucking hate the Sex Pistols, but people at the early Sex Pistols show then went on to do loads of derivative stuff, you know, that was,
this was yours, more
successful.
You hear something as simple as the Sex Pistols or you know, actually, let's just say just the Sex Pistols before I piss anyone else off with any other bands. But like, you'll hear something and you go, cool, four chords are cool, but what about five? And then what about having vocal harmonies? And then, you know, that's where it sort of comes from.
It just goes.
It becomes this like weird beast of stuff. But yeah, moving on, because again, like you said, we could talk about Blackfish for an hour. I might just do a Blackfish episode.
3 hours about Blackfish. Yeah. Just me gushing over Blackfish.
I'll get everyone together who's picked Blackfish and we'll just talk about Blackfish.
We'll just have the Blackfish blog.
Done. I'm sure Musical Mathematics had Blackfish Day, so maybe I'll try and release it for a...
There was. I remember that because Musical Mathematics was a fairly reputable blog at the time when Goddamn was starting.
Yeah.
And they were repping Goddamn, and I was like, Goddamn aren't really a math band. It's like, oh, they know the heritage of this band.
Yeah, where it comes from. So that's one thing I was just going to mention, is that like, Goddamn, for all intents and purposes, is 100 mile an hour straightforward. Like, you know what you're doing. It's none of this namby-pamby twiddly stuff, as I seem to dislike as it goes along the way. But but you can hear, there's a lot of these bands that I was listening to today and yesterday, like Monotonic stuff, you can hear it, and Selfish Cunt, which I'll have to try keep bleeping out if I'm going to get this on the radio at some point. But you can hear like those guitar lines and guitar runs and stuff that people do. They're angular and stuff, but they're still easy enough for the average listener to grasp onto, you know what I mean? That you're not forcing too much. Like the Blackfish thing you said, it's just all at the same time.
Yeah.
It's very, very structured and loud, which is the best.
Well, I mean, Goddamn's got a mix of everything. We'll always do like acoustic, simple, you know, two chords.
I love those acoustic tracks that you throw in either in the middle or the end of records and stuff, just to like, and it always thinks, you think that you've sort of toning it the record down, just going, thanks for listening, guys, this sort of thing. And then at the end, you'll have just the biggest, most fucking huge riff that you've ever heard. Like, I love it when you do that. Because I know to expect it, and it still surprises me every time.
I mean, the thing is, I've kind of got like a funny thing with the acoustic guitar. I love the acoustic guitar. But for me, acoustic guitar is kind of like masturbation. It's like a private act, you know? Like, you should, like, nobody needs you wanking away at a house party, you know? Like, it's, and white guy, acoustic guitar, beard, long hair. Come on, like, I love Father John Misty. But also, he's very aware that he's a cliche. You know?
Yeah. I
don't know what, it's insecurity. I'm totally insecure over the acoustic guitar. I totally don't want to go wanking in front of people. But like, for me, yeah, it's a private instrument and I like to put it on a record. And it's actually all across, like our last record is like, the only overdub we did was acoustic guitar on our last record. And this record's got an acoustic. So I do, maybe a friend actually messaged me saying like, you really need to do an acoustic show soon. And I was like, I think I've played enough acoustic now over lockdown that I'm enough. Taking a little tussle in front of people, you know?
Yeah.
But it's also a cruel instrument, acoustic guitar as well, because it really exposes people. And I think that's maybe where my insecurity lies with it. So I probably shouldn't project. But you can use the masturbation acoustic guitar soundbite if you want.
Oh yeah, no, I'm gonna be using that one as well. I can have a ringtone. Acoustic guitar is like masturbation, full stop. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, I love this, like, Yamaha sent me this thing and like I've finally bonded with this acoustic guitar. I'm fucking, like, I'm friends with this now. I think you need to become friends with acoustic guitar to really, and then I've written a lot of our records are written on this thing, which is just a Gitanele.
Oh, wow.
Which I introduced to, I introduced this to my mate Laurie from Slayers. I texted him today. And he...
doing all the name dropping there. I'm loving it.
And then he's written loads of records on those things. And they're great. I think you need to bond with an acoustic. And I think writing on acoustic is really important. But what do you want? My wife's coming. What do you want? The Hoover. I've got to go and give my wife the Hoover.
Okay, cool. I'll do a clap.
Yeah, keep the. I've got to go and give my wife the Hoover.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Keep
no
that.
Worries,
yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Ready?
Hey.
Okay, so yeah, hey, here we go. Moving on. Another venue and band that are no longer together, but we again hoping are coming together. A little band from Texas, Mexico, however you want to call it. It's the Mars Volta.
Yeah.
There's a lot that you can delve into.
All our mates, Mars Volta, fucking Blackfish. Like, yeah. they've all done that, haven't they?
Yeah.
So, in fact, I think I've definitely seen Blackfish play Interatic ESP at the show, I think in Nuneaton or something. Nice. Anyway, so the Mars Volta gig I'm going to pick and time that I picked them was on the Francis the Mute tour, which would have been 2005, maybe?
Yeah.
I don't know. When Francis the Mute came out, and again one of those bands where a lot of people talk about At the Drive-In and how great they were, and they were great, and I remember being a young kid and looking at YouTube clips, it's crazy, like afro, you know, destruction on Jules Holland shows. I'm like,
yes.
Whoa, this is awesome, but it's a lot of nonsense, like but it's brilliant and I love it, you know. And there was that kind of buzz around them and expecting Mars Volta to be like that. And Mars Volta weren't like that at all.
No.
And in many respects for me, I am way more of a Mars Volta fan than I am an At the Drive-In fan, because they were our generation, weren't they? They spanned the whole of my youth. I would say, you know, I'm 32 now, and they definitely spanned the boy mode of yeah, my yeah. life, right?
Yeah.
And they were there when I was an early teen, and then right up through till I did adult shit. And that's when they stopped that 10-year kind of period. And I remember seeing them and being in the queue outside at the old Carling Academy in Birmingham. Did you ever go to that?
Yeah, I saw Placebo there, seen a few
Placebo. Yeah,
Placebo.
And it was that's somebody who listens to fucking Kerrang as a teenager. Is it Johnny Doom used to say Placebo?
Yeah, I mean it, yeah. Bloody Kerrang radio, eh? There's a blasphemy. Yeah, top 10 radio kebab, stations that don't exist anymore, eh?
Kebab radio, yeah. So I remember being in the queue outside the academy, and it was just like all these. I remember seeing like loads of people in bands there, and just like fucking all the nerds were there at the show. And I remember being into this band called Keiko, and they were there, and they were just another kind of Blackfish band that would just blew my mind. And I'd be like, this is where all the nerds are. This is my gang. This is my way of life right here. And I think a lot of people, I've never been so crushed at a show as that Mars Volta show, because everybody there thought they were the world's biggest Mars Volta fan. Like, I remember being so crushed. I didn't quite make it to the front at the start of the show, but all during the build-up of that show, I remember being so crushed. And I'm a tiny guy. I'm like 5'6", 5'7". And obviously when I was a teenager, I weighed nothing. I was like a sprite. And I remember being held for the majority of waiting for them to go on. There was that much of a crush. My feet didn't touch the floor at all. And I was being held up, like hovered around.
Levitating at a Mars Volta.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody thought they were the world's biggest Mars Volta fan. And it became like this really funny, like stamina fitness test for like musicality, because people started to get bored during the show, which is really, because they did the whole, a lot of people were there expecting, you know, obviously they loved Delouse and were expecting, you know, that pseudo crossover At the Drive-In performance.
Yeah.
And they just did a prog show at that. You know, you talk about one aspect of like going to watch Blackfish and having the punk rock in their life. they were the big prog bands of our generation. Yeah. Prog band of our generation. I remember having to come get out from the front of the show and go and get a drink at the bar, a glass of water. And there was people falling asleep all around the sides at this show because they just did these fucking jams that went on for ages. And again, like the Blackfish thing, they just did what the fuck they wanted to do and they did not give a shit what, you know, provided the audience weren't being abusive to each other, they didn't give a shit what was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And hang on, were you at the show?
No.
Okay, so everybody talks about this
bit after that.
Okay, right. So everybody talks about this one bit at the end of the show where they suddenly, like the last 30 seconds of the show, last 5 minutes of the show, where they went at the drive-in for like the last. It's like we've been wanking away all evening. Look at us wanking away. He's falling asleep there. It doesn't matter. Yeah, I'm just playing my fucking Latino shred, and King Crimson impression. And then they just went from like at the drive-in mode, like out of nowhere. And I remember like Omar getting, sorry, not Omar, Cedric getting like the security's headphones with the talky bit, putting them on, like screaming like fucking like Thoracic ESP or something down there. And it's just been like, whoa, that's still the same band, you know?
Yeah.
But it was just definitely one of those shows where it kind of cut the wheat from the chaff and the fact that like, I was like, no, I'm not here for hype. I'm here for the fucking music. And I'm going to let them do their shit, you know? And I remember there was a point during that show where there was a few points. There was me floating around, watching people go to sleep. And then there was another bit of the show where I remember being like a really quiet bit. And I went, Omar, I love you. some like gushing thing. Yeah. And there's all these like prog, like hyper supersonic fest nerds turning around going like, Don't talk in the quiet bit.
You know who you're talking to, young man.
Don't do that. And then Omar just went like that. You know, like,
little nod, lovely.
So yeah, I was like, job done. You know. So and then musically, there was this one bit, and a huge part of Goddamn Now. Ironically, there's a pedal I use called the meat box, and I'm vegan, and this is a huge part of the Goddamn sound. This is a pedal called the meat box. And I remember seeing Juan Alderat, the bass player, and he's just grooving away, and then there's this sound, and the whole place went from being like, oh, like rock and roll show to like this out of nowhere. And I was like, he's just pressed a pedal and the whole place just melts your face off. What's he just done? Like, what the fuck was that? And years later, I figure out that he was using the meat box. And I ended up getting like an endorsement from Digitech and DoD, and they sent me a bunch of pedals. And the one thing I was like, can I just, send me what you like, but I want this meat box because I love Juan Alderat, and I love this sound. And I got it, and I was like, I am never, this is going to be on my board forever. Like, this is, I want to do that thing that Juan did to me, to everybody now.
Yeah.
And I do it like every time, like the basis of our band is like that bit on, that bit off, that pedal on, that bit off, you know, like loud, quiet, you know, that I wanted to evoke that emotion that Juan did to me when I was a kid, you know, all the time to people, you know? So, and then I met Juan at some Earthquaker Devices thing, and he just had all the time in the world for people.
So I had the strangest meeting with Cedric before and at the driving show when they were touring with Death From Above. And I think me and my mate Joe, we were just wandering around Digbeth because I'd been living in Cardiff for quite a while and I'd not seen Joe in age. I think he was living down in Poole. And we got the mega bus or whatever is up to Birmingham. We thought, oh, let's go wander around Digbeth. We haven't been there for a while. You know, he's had the lock up there and all that. And then we saw there was just a vintage shop that we'd never seen before. We're like, oh, we'll go in there. And at the back, it was like three of the members about the drive-in. And we were sat there like, for us just going for a random wander, we've now bumped into Cedric. And I've got a photograph of me and Joe and Cedric. And Cedric does not have a fucking clue what's going on. And it's like the best photo I've ever taken. Because I sort of like, oh, do you want if we get a photo? I shook his hand. So he goes, yeah, no problem. Obviously, he's taken photos with fans before.
Yeah,
I don't think he knows how to do it still. But it was
it was
an honor to meet someone like that.
He's, what's the word? He's a bit kind of bad. He's he's a raw guy, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah,
and they're all raw people, you know.
You couldn't really have a conversation with him, that. I feel like. Yeah. I feel like, but he didn't want one either, which was, we were totally appreciative as well. We're like, just, he's got to get in his own now.
I think he's a nerd in his own time. And and something that, like, I've grown up over in recent years is I always think that, like, I was always too judgmental of people. I was always too, like, especially people in bands as well. I was always like, they're not being friendly. They must be a dick. Like,
you're like, no, well, no. In a bus for 9 hours and now I'm sleeping. Yeah, and now I've got to go play a show for sound check and then sit around for 3 hours. And like, it's just, it's tiring.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's just like, oh, no, I'm the dickhead. Like, you know, like, it's...
Just you wouldn't want someone in your office job coming in and just going, hi, talk to me and take a picture of you.
I was definitely for years, like, the dickhead of just like, oh, boring people are fucking, like, annoying, like, up their own arses. No, not everybody's a dickhead, Tom. Like, that's something I've kind of grown used to. But I mean, yeah, definitely in the band, you don't want to be proddy and stuff all the time. And it's just like nerds kind of like, oh my God, I want to talk to you about a million things, but I can't quite get it all out, you know?
I think that experience was sort of like, I could have asked him 20 million different questions. And in the moment I looked at the look in his face, I was like, just going to go and let him have a beer backstage and chill out for the next 4 hours while I stand in the
queue. Bands get creeped out as well. Bands just go like, look, rabbit in the headlights and stuff, because it's just like, I've experienced it where it's like, I just feel like saying, oh, just a guy.
Calm down. Like,
I'm just a really boring guy. Like, you want to, like, you can come over for lunch. It's fine. Like, just chill the fuck out. You know? Like, anyway, Mars Volta. Have we finished Mars Volta now?
I mean, again, it's another one of those bands that, like, not just you and me, but all of our friends could easily discuss the Mars Volta.
I come back to them. They're an old friend. I come back to them. I listen to them and I find layers that weren't there before. And they are just a gift in my life, that band. Like,
do you have that thing where, like, I'll look at, like, my work schedule or something and go, oh, I've got 2 hours there before, like, I'm either recording a podcast or whatever. And I go, oh, I could listen to D-Less in the Cobatorium in that time.
Yeah, I could listen to Bedlam now.
Just sort of like go, oh, there's an hour and 20 minutes of free Mars Volta time there. Like, in the first lockdown, I like got myself some really, really nice headphones. And the first thing I wanted to do was just listen to D-Less in the Cobatorium. So I just sat in my bedroom and the lights off and just listened to it for the hour or so that it's on for. And it's like, this is it.
I mean, that's a joy to be able to do that. I mean, I think our generation, the CD buyers, you know, the last of the tail end of the CD buyers, we couldn't, you know, maybe bar like LimeWire and destroying your mom's computer or something. you just used to go to shops and you would absorb yourself in a record. And Mars Volta provided that for me, where I'd go like, I don't quite understand it to start off with. And you're like, oh no, what's going on? I remember Ash being like, oh, what's it like? And now Ash is like also the world, like Ash was like Indie Lad, Kings of Leon, Stereophonics. And I was like going like, check the Mars Volta out, I'm so wanky. You know, and like, and then he would cut through that. He'd go like, oh, fucking,
I can imagine the face that Ash would put
showing off the music. Phrase, like,
Latin math rock. I can just look at you go, what the fuck are you on about, Tom?
King of the Black Country. And he was give it 3-4 lessons and he was like, I'm addicted to this shit.
That's what happens, isn't it? I mean, nobody understands it. Let's both agree there. Nobody understands the Mars Volta, but you either get it a bit or you don't get it at all. There's no, like, you can go on and on about them, but nobody really understands what's going on in Omar and Cedric's brains when they're writing that stuff. And the rest of the music, I mean, this goes back to, again, I think I was chatting with Damien about where bands having so many members, almost so hard to keep track of, like bands like The Fall he was mentioning. It must be so easy for the two of them, because the two of them are the Mars Volta, let's be honest, but to have such a wealth of musicians to just draw on, like John Theodore is one of my favorite drummers in the world.
Amazing.
By any stretch, not the best drummer in the world, because obviously that's completely up to debate.
No, but he's got that bonzo thing. And I could go off and tell you about John. But the thing is with the Mars Volta, and again, not to parallel it to Goddamn, I think people write in pairs really, really well, like, because they could pick people up and they can very, like, one was very much a part of the Mars Volta for me.
Yeah.
and Thomas Pridgeon was very much a and all the amazing musicians they had, but those two together, they could do they are unstoppable. They are unstoppable. So
let's move on then to let's talk about Monotonix, because I want to hear a lot about these guys, because
this is a curveball one.
But I've done some listening to them today and a bit of research and everything, and for all intents and purposes, they sound like one of the most interesting acts that I've heard of in a long time. Like most people I've spoken to have picked bands from the UK because they're bands they could, you know, like Johnny Foreigner. We're talking about Blackfish and everything, and then they're guys from.
I could do an hour on Johnny Foreigner. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. See, that's it. I'm gonna have to tick these things off the list now.
Like, I think I scared them a little bit. It was like, who's this guy? Because they supported us once, Johnny Foreigner, and
go on.
They supported us. We did the show, and they supported us. And it was a big thing. I played it down, but it was a really big thing for them to play supporting us. I think I nerded them out a little bit too much because I was that little kid and they were this big Birmingham band time, and I fucking worshipped them. You know? Anyway, sorry, what were you saying about spoke to Johnny Foreigner about?
Yeah, so they picked a band from America and stuff, but most people have picked bands from... this time next week, never mind. Most people have picked bands from the UK because they're so close to them. But these guys are from Tel Aviv, which it's not like normal. All due respect to bands from everywhere else in the world, but you don't accidentally stumble upon bands from such sort of, I say obscure places, but you know, it's not Radio 1 listening to it and getting it from there. But they have absolutely everything you could possibly want in
the party rock.
Yeah, it's classic rock, punk. Pop, like I said, they're from Tel Aviv, but they could quite easily be from New York. Like, they've got this swagger about them.
I mean, the way he
that
sings
was a really wanky thing for me to say.
No, it's not. It's fine. They sing in their native accent, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
They were a band that I think everybody should have experienced live. I think they've done stuff that have, and a lot of bands like Blackfish and like At The Drive-In have done stuff where nobody needs to do that anymore because they've done it, you know. Monotonix have completed that. They did the lightning bolt in the crowd thing with knobs and fucking whistles on. They did the chariot shit, the Blackfish shit with as many knobs and whistles on as you can get. But the core of it was kick. The drummer had a kick, a fucking snare, maybe a hi-hat and a crash ride. Guitarist just played like a Fender bass man, maxed out with some, you know, with octave drop depth, drop A strings or whatever. And then this, you know, I don't want to say for fear of looking racist, but like a Borat, very Borat looking guys, in the fact that they had, you know, the curly hair, and they played up
like
to
the... Yeah, they look like Carlos Santana in the 70s. They had that Omar vibe, that crazy, like...
The Omar vibe, but then they used to play up to that kind of Borat kind of side to it. People use the word Borat as a slur. And it was just captivating. You would have their sweat and their... It's about as friendly, invasive a show as you could possibly get. You know, like they would put a bin on people's heads and parade them around and stuff. And like you would be standing on the drum kit and then, you know, you'd be going around the venue and in the street. If anybody watches this, and what they need to do is they just need to go on YouTube and type in Monotonix Live, right, with an X at the end, Monotonix with an X, and just watch the concert. You'll lose hours and hours of your time. I saw him at the Rainbow Warehouse. Oh, sorry, the Rainbow Pub, like with the room at the back, which, again, I kept it to my theme of bands that aren't going anymore and venues that aren't going. And I remember that night, remember the Orange Unsigned act, I think? And it was the Scarlet Harlots that then went on to be Trumacca. They were in the finals of that. They were the Birmingham band, and they wanted to show a crazy night out in Birmingham. and Channel 4, I think it was Channel 4, Channel 4 were there, and I remember talking to Sam during, as they were setting up for this Monotonic show, and they used the footage of this Monotonic show to show a crazy night out in Birmingham, and it looked fucking bonkers. Yeah, and they're like, it's like, join Scarlet Harlots on a night out. This is just your average night out in Birmingham. No, it wasn't. It was the best night. I mean, what a night to just get some fucking content for your Channel 4 show. Great band, Scarlet Harlots. But it was just the most party fun show spectacle you could see, where it wasn't punk rock, it wasn't rock and roll, it was just, but it was all those things, and it was just fun, you know. And there was a photo, there's a photographer called Andy Watson, who's a well-known photographer on the scene in Birmingham, and who I've subsequently become very good friends with, but I didn't know him at the time, but he took this photo of me that came up years later, and I'm watching the show, like teenage me, skinny jeans, Superga fucking shoes, hipster prick, going like I'm watching this show, but like literally like holding my head going like, oh my God, like literally the picture of this young kid having his mind blown. And I just see that photo and just take myself back to that moment. Like, I want to do this. I can do this. You know, it's I mean, anybody who's seen Monotonic would just go like, yeah, flat out, one of the best live bands you'll ever see.
I mean, so. It's a good sign for a band to know that they're doing something right, because they recorded a record with Steve Albini, which I guess is a lot of people's musicians' dream to do.
That's
what you feel about Steve Albini, I guess, because you stick his name on a record, you go, Albini did it. It must be fucking.
Yeah, Albini. Exactly. I mean, fucking hell, I could do 10 hours on Steve Albini. I know all his magic and all his flaws, and I could do it. You know, I could just. I think I put him on too much of a pedestal. He did. He works with Monotonics apparently, which I. You say that to me. I didn't even know. I just like love their live shows and listen to their records. But it totally doesn't surprise me. I'm forever finding out all these records that I love that Steve Albini's done that I know, and then there's more that I already like that I didn't realize he did. It makes total sense. I would love to go. We've every single album we have done, we have talked about doing it with Steve Albini, and somebody has either discouraged it, or we've thought like, oh, it's probably not the best idea right now, because. He's done some records, I think, where he doesn't polish a fucking turd. Like, if the band aren't ready, they're going to sound wank. They're going to make a terrible record. Or if they haven't quite written the songs that were appropriate for a Steve Albini record, it's going to sound awful. So I just not got to that point where it's been feasible to do one with him, and then we've got the right record with him for him to record. I mean, yeah, I think you can go on and calculate how much he is a day. And I think with flights, it almost works out as cheap to go like do like 3 days with Steve Albini at Abbey Road. I think I would love to see a band do that, because I want to do that someday. Because obviously, you know, you've got to fly out to fucking Chicago to go to a studio, but one of the studios he loves working in is Abbey Road. So I think there was one point where we were like, got to do Steve Albini, Abbey Road, but. With the last record we did with Sylvia Massey, obviously she was top of our list, and she said okay to do it, you know. So we just went with her, and then we were going to go with Steve Albini if not. But then she knew that I wanted to do a record with Steve Albini, so we cut the last record that we did live. And I always had the lack of confidence. Sorry, going off on a Steve Albini.
That's all right.
Always had that lack of confidence where if you're going with Steve Albini, you cut the record in like 3 to 5 days, really, budget wise. That's all it allows for nowadays, unless you were fucking Bush or whatever. which actually, I love that record that they Bush. So I was always insecure over like, I don't think we can do it in like 3 days. But we did the last record we did with Sylvia, we did it in like 2.5 days. So it was like, oh shit, yeah, we can do this, you know. So
just a dry run.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
I mean, a fantastic dry run, if you ask me, if that's the case.
Yeah. I mean, you, if you want to get close to the Steve Albini, close to the Steve Albini sound, there's a way of doing it. I think everybody knows how to get close now. You just slightly delay a stereo room sound to your drum kit and you get most of your way there. But it's still not the same thing.
No, it's not the same sound. We tried to make it sound like Steve Albini other than
and everybody Steve knows Albini doing that. Doing, like,
But yeah, so yeah, monotonics, were just quickly going back to that, like, one of the more interesting acts that someone's brought up on this, and I've got thank you for introducing to him, because I'm definitely going to listen to a lot more of him. It's a shame, like, I'm discovering all these bands now I cannot go and see, because I know it's the point of this.
I know, yeah. You set yourself a really fucking evil task.
Yeah. I mean, the sort of ulterior motive of the whole thing is to attempt to try and get at least one of these bands that people talk about back together. And a little bird is telling me, and I'm not going to spoil anything, that there is a little something happening with one of the acts that people have spoken about. So something has happened.
Can I be that little birdie? I know what it fucking is. It's fucking Blackfish, isn't it?
Nah, I wish if it was Blackfish, I would have quit doing this already, because that was my that's the motive.
We're going to talk about Selfish Cunt next. In fact, all the bands I've picked get back together. Monotonics, I don't think they're completely off the cards. I think they basically got banned from every venue in Tel Aviv.
Yeah, I read that. I was like, that's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah, I mean, what an accolade. And then obviously Mars Volta have put out like a bunch of reissues, so Mars Volta are gonna fucking do shit. They've got to. I hope it would be nice if they did it with One, because One's been really poorly, and we've touched upon that earlier, didn't we, about like I met One and he was just the nicest guy. So I hope they do with One. I won't be disappointed if they don't, but it'd be really nice sentiment if they did, you know, because he's had a really bad accident and would be back to full speed. It would be cool if they did that with him. Blackfish totes going to do fucking...
They have to, man.
I think it's, 2000 Trees or something they're going to do, or like Arctangent or something they're going to do it. And then Selfish Cunt, we're going to talk about Selfish Cunt next, right?
Yeah.
Should we lead on to that? Is that
go ahead, point? Yeah. Just dive straight in, mate.
So I totally fanboy over Martin Tomlinson, the singer of Selfish Cunt. And he's been posting a few little things about Selfish Cunt. But they're one of those names where he's just like, my dad, like very Catholic dad, gets some power on his glasses. My very Catholic dad giggles every time. Like, I can't say that thing. You know, I'll put my glasses back on it. You can't say that, you know. Top likes a band called Selfish Cunt. You know, like
I did say to it, like I've been not giving too much offer to get this put on a local radio station down in South Wales. I might have to cut this whole section from here, just because even though that word is banned around a lot down here in South Wales, it mostly is a term of endearment.
Yeah,
friendly though. Like,
yeah, I mean, if you're Australian as well, they're like, this fucking cunt. They use it as like, you know, like both my friend, my friend and my enemy. I mean, there's like the word cunt is a magical thing. I mean, a lot of people are offended by the word cunt, but there was the comedian, Jewish comedian, curly hair, used to be on Channel 4. Love him.
Vegan. I'm sorry, man.
Simon Amstel. Does a really good sketch about the word cunt. It's like, oh, you're calling somebody a cunt, and you go, oh, you're calling me a cunt, the giver of life, the gateway to the world we all travel through, the miraculous, you know. It's like, yeah, it's beautiful. You know, I think we need to reclaim the word,
reclaim it. Yeah.
But they're saying selfish cunt, so they're using it as a derogative term, aren't they? So, you know. There we go. So regardless of the politics of the word, they're again, one of those bands where they were my stooges, I would say. They were my, and they are very raw power, stooges sounding. And I remember seeing the gig, we're going to do it in venues that aren't really going anymore. I saw them at the Macbeth, and this tiny venue in London, really like alleyway. There's the bar here again, like the CBGBs at Dalston or whatever, wherever it's in London, some hipster place in London, and some fucking wanky place in London. But it's a great place, great bar. I remember seeing Mark Ronson there at a show, actually, an Iron Rock show, a band called Iron Rock, and he's there in his fucking, you know,
$1,000 smoking jacket,
peach suit, you know, at the bar watching this. I rock are a great band. Anyway, I saw it in the Macbeth. Anyway, so yeah, Selfish Cunt in the Macbeth, and this guy Martin Tomlinson is, you know, outwardly gay, and I'm not sure if he's trans a lot of the time, but he, you know, cross dresses and stuff, and he really owns that. You know, he really he becomes this. And I'm a big fan of like RuPaul's Drag Race. I've got a lot of friends who are trans and gay, and there's a real power to it. There's a real power to that sexuality. And there's a real power to homosexuality, and he will kick your ass with that shit. You know, he will take anybody down. It's not just like that clicky fingers sass thing. It's like fierce, like, and sexy, and like just emits power, but not in that I'm better than you way. It's that ego death way, you know. It's that kind of like, none of us are that hoity-toity. None of us are fucking better than anybody. And he just fucking cuts like a fucking axe and like levels everybody in the room and goes like, I'm here in a fucking nighty playing a show with some pantyhose on, and it's going to be the most kick-ass shit you've ever seen in your life. Like, and I remember there was a show where they one of their lyrics is one of their songs is an anti-racist song. It uses the N-word in it. Now, regardless of your politics or whether he should have used that word in the song, it's there. And at the time, it was an okay thing for him to say. He was, you know, an anti-racist slant, a gay guy talking about oppression, blah, blah, blah. And there's, I've witnessed this with a couple of punk rock bands. The right wing and the BNP and the racists seem to latch onto that one word and think, oh my God, they're using the N-word, or this is some kind of white supremacy thing. Now, I wasn't at this show, and I really wish I was. There was a show that I think they played in Shrewsbury, and it's the Stuff of Legend. Now, I was too young at the time to be in them, or I wasn't quite into them. I got into them when they reformed. And there was all these racists turning up, all these fucking skinheads. And apparently, he destroyed these people. He made them feel so inferior. He made them, these guys who thought they were supremacists and thought they were puffing their chests up. Out comes this gay guy, and there's this half an audience full of people who've got the wrong impression, think that he's a white supremacist. And he fucking destroys these people, and all these white supremacists get fucking scared. And that's just like, that's punk rock. Like, that's fucking power. Yeah.
Like, well, a lot of their stuff, like when you look at the names of their songs and things, especially that their starting point, I know I don't mean to sort of compare them to any bands or anything, but you've got bands like Sleaford Mods, and like when Slaves started, they started off as a two-piece, didn't they, Selfish Cunt?
Yeah, they had a drum machine. They did a drum machine and that was an early version of that. And I know for a fact that Jason from Sleaford Mods is a big Selfish Cunt fan.
I guess like you listen to the lyrics or read the lyrics or even see the titles of the songs, and they're very anti-establishment, but not in an aggressive way, if you know what I mean. It might be aggressive lyrics and stuff, but it's what's the word I'm trying to think of? Being an activist, like doing something.
But and it's not that thing where it cuts like an axe and it just levels everybody. Yeah. And it's just like, no, we are all here. You know, this is where we are all at, you know, and I'm not better than you for saying this. No, we're all here. Like, and we need to deal with this shit, and we can have a fucking party doing it. You know, like it's...
So saying that leveling things, I did read that they got banned from, what was it, the Institute of Contemporary Arts because they smashed up Snow Patrol's equipment.
That sounds about right.
Which and then, is, you know, pretty rock and roll. I mean, apologies for any fans of Snow Patrol, but, you know, if you've got a band like Selfish Cunt, they probably said something to piss them off. But
I mean, they tacitly didn't get as far. Maybe then, like, goddamn, the name kind of opens some doors because people are like, oh, it's an arrogant thing to say, you know, punk rock or rock and roll. But then it does close some doors for you. You know, and it did close a lot of doors for Selfish Cunt. They were an underrated band because of their name, but also they got to that point because people were like, what is back for Selfish Cunt? And they back it up, you know?
So
there was there's a story. I mean, I think Martin Tomlinson has his own demons, and he's, you know, like any struggling artist, he's had his own problems. But he's not always been on the right side of history, but which again is a punk rock thing, you know, he's learning, he's learned, he's had that personal growth with his own bands, and he's with his own band, and he's pushed those buttons and discovered. But yeah, there was a time when there was a famous incident where the Libertines were outside the
outside Buckingham Palace, wasn't it?
Buckingham Palace, and he was literally like picking up. They were doing a photo shoot about, you know, British bands and stuff, and they were like the ugly underdogs of the scene, and he was like literally picking up horseshit and throwing them at the Libertines, which, to me as a kid, like hearing these stories about him cutting down races and throwing horseshit like indie icons. I love those indie icons, but it was just like, I need to see this band. And when they reformed, yeah, it was just, I saw them when they reformed, and it was just, you know, it really lived up to it. So, yeah.
They had a very, not as same as quite a few of these bands that people have brought up, which I suppose is a good thing because I'm discovering a lot more stuff now, but I'd not really listened to them before. And the band that I could put my finger on with them, and you may agree or disagree with me, is that he's got a very 80s Matchbox.
Again, a huge band. You say 80s Matchbox and goddamn in the same sentence, it's like, so it's obvious that we love 80s Matchbox. And over the years, I think I've got to know every member of 80s Matchbox, either from playing shows with them or them turning up to our shows, because we obviously fly their flag. You know, yeah. I remember being in Hamburg and one of the members coming to our show and being like, cool, I've completed the set now, and you're a fucking hero.
All the shiny, know, like,
yeah. And
they were one of the first bands, like the first weird bands, for lack of a better phrase, from when I was 13 14 15. You're listening to your Snow Patrol, the Strokes, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, the radio friendly sort of thing. And I had a friend called Alex in school, and he gave me Horse of the Dog, and I was like, what is this, like, my dad would introduce me to like Metallica and sort of Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Carlos Santana and all this sort of stuff, but nothing compared quite to that first time I heard that record.
Oh, totally. And there was no bands around like that at that time.
Yeah, but that was the same way to stand out as well.
They had that Queens of the Stone Age thing, and obviously they did, I think they did do some shows for Queens of the Stone Age, and then my mate Rich was
in the
band.
I'd like to think they did, yeah.
Yeah, joined Nine Inch Nails for a hot minute, I figured it out recently. It is the Cramps and it is Bauhaus. Like, I got into Bauhaus recently and I was like, oh no, this is 80s Matchbox. But then it's still not 80s Matchbox. I can just see the lineage of it, what I mean? Yeah. And but it took me all that time. It took me, you know, fucking half my life of being in obsessing over 80s Matchbox to stop and go like, oh,
where did they come from? Like, in
it's Bauhaus. Yeah. So it's
they had a solid Bauhaus fucking Nike advert sellouts. But yeah,
Matchbox
did. Yeah, I remember because it was after I'd been given the record and listened to it, and I can't remember what song it is. But
the major label bands, and I think they were so off their face during that whole time, they won't have known which way was up and what was going on. From the friends I know from this band, I mean, it's not gonna hurt me to share their stories, but secondhand stories. But they I've heard stories of them going out after a gig and withdrawing like a grand from a hole in the wall and spewing that, and they do that every night, you know, and on drugs and partying. And I said, you know, talking about good memories of it. And my friend Mark was in them, and he was basically saying, yeah, there's a lot of turmoil and there's a lot of angst and there's a lot of confusion over drugs and stuff. And it was like, oh yeah, there must have been some party times. And he's like, I cannot remember any of it, you know.
And for them having a lifestyle like that, remember it a little.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the kind of tragic story of it. I'm sure there's plenty they can remember. But they probably got them out of hole or something doing an Nike advert, or
I was thinking it doesn't really get more accessible than a Nike advert on primetime television, as in, you know, when a song sticks in your head from a TV advert. Usually like
JCQ did that, also friends with the 80s Matchbox, they did that Lucozade advert, and they got a good paycheck for that. I was like, oh, you got when you literally hear that, like these people who are like sleeping in somebody's bath or like living with their parents still, and they get paid like 80 grand or something for an advert, you just go, fucking take the money. Like, it's fine. But I'd like to think I wouldn't do a Nike advert. I really like to think, you know, I'm an anti-capitalist and I play in an anti-capitalist band. I'd like to think I wouldn't have to be in a position where I'd have to take the lack of money. But nobody knows.
I mean, you'd look sick in a full-piece tracksuit, though. Let's be completely honest with you. And Hannah just kitted out.
It would be great.
It'd be like that Wayward scene in the Reebok.
That kid who, like, thought the pinnacle of my life when I was a kid was getting some fucking Air Jordans. You know, like, it's... But at the same time...
I always knew you were one of those.
No. Honestly, I was, you know... But there was... you've got Lil Nas doing these trainers.
Yeah, yeah.
The blood in them and stuff.
Mm.
And people are going like, oh my God, he's put blood in them. And it's, you know, Nike, you know, kick off because, you know...
Copy, I mean, they, like, do they have sell, kicked selling. Off? Just put a record on this now.
Yeah, they have kicked off. And it's just like, well, Nike can fucking sue me over this and I'll just ignore your legal letters. Yeah. But there's blood in all of their fucking shoes. It's all slave labor. It's like, oh, he's selling them secondhand and putting his blood in it, and that doesn't represent us. No, Nike, there is blood in all your fucking shoes, and blood in all your clothes, and there's little kids' blood.
Shop local, I think, is basically what you're trying to say. You have to have some models, I guess.
Just do a modicum of research.
Well, I mean, let's leave it at that when it comes to the bands that we talked to, and I've fucking loved every moment of hearing about all them, especially obviously we can talk about Blackfish all day, we can talk about Mars Volta all day. I'm definitely going to go away and listen to a lot more of Monotonics and Selfish Cunt as well, but I got to ask you one question, and I haven't asked you this before, but what's Dave Grohl like? Because and it's the coolest fucking picture in the world. If anyone hasn't seen his picture of Tom trying to destroy four by 12 orange cabs with a guitar while another man holds it behind because goddamn wants supported the Foo Fighters, if that's a little thing to say, you've got to see this picture. But what's that man like? What's he like then?
So I can run there's twice that I've hung out with him.
Oh, okay, yeah, cool.
Yeah, but I say that because he gave us the time.
Yeah, that's what I heard from Damon, from obviously do the drum shop
he came and texted for us, you know.
Yeah, I messaged him about it when it happened, and he was like, he had the time. It wasn't just, here's a quick picture, see you later. It was more than that, wasn't it?
No, he gives you his time. And he is a fan of music. He is a nerd.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're there and you've got something to say about some kind of music or anything, he will talk to you about it. You know, he will fill the room, he will fill the air, and he will put you at ease. I remember the first time I met him, I walked in the room and he was talking to my wife and the photographer that we were with. And somebody was like, you've got to get in your dressing room, Dave Grohl's in your dressing room. And he was like, oh, hey, and came and spoke to us after we played and was talking about our music in depth and about the show that we just played in depth and just completely put... I walked up to him and it's like, you know this guy. You know that he's going to be... And I put my arm around him and he was like, oh, hey. And it was just instantly like that, like relief and put at ease over him.
Mm.
And, you know, he... On paper, at that time, we shouldn't have played with the Foo Fighters. He just so happened to hear us through the grapevine. His manager said, his manager liked us and put us forward to play with him. And he became a fan of the band, you know. And it wasn't, we had no monetary or political gain or like, we weren't some hot band at the time. He was just liked.
Well, you were, but band. You know. Okay.
Well, maybe I didn't notice that at the time, but like, he just liked the band, you know, and could talk about it in depth. And that was just like, you know, I could take that to the grave, you know. But at the same time, I'm not like the world's biggest Foo Fighters fan. I think if I'd have gone there and been like, oh my God, I love every single thing and I've paid lots and lots of money to see you. And I'm like, oh, check out my Foo Fighters t-shirt. If I'd have been that person, he'd have been
different, I guess. Like, yeah. Like we said earlier on about...
But actually, no, I don't think he would. I think he probably would have given you the time as well. But I think it just made things easier. And I wasn't. And then the second time we met him, we... flown to do show with them in Budapest. Mm-hmm. And I've got, even from this short period of time, I've got so many Dave Grohl stories. But
we'll keep it at two for today, and we'll just save them.
We'll keep it at two for today. Yeah. And we were gonna miss a sound check because Chris Shiflett wanted to fuck about with the guitar pedal. And he wasn't happy with some guitar pedal, which made probably no difference to anybody else but Chris Shiflett. But of course, we have to courteously be like, of course you may. We will. Yeah. You can have our time check slot time. It's fine, you know. And we honestly weren't bothered.
Yeah.
But Dave was bothered. When Dave came out and basically occupied us while we were missing our sound check, you know. Kept us happy while we were missing our sound check, you know. And again, you know, was asking, you know, specific. He remembers things about people, and yeah. he asks specific things about people. But there was a really funny thing where I was walking to the stage as they were about to go on stage, and he says to me, "Oh, where's your dungarees?" And I was like, "Wrong member, mate." And he was like, and you could see him dying inside. Like, because Ash was going through a phase of wearing dungarees.
Yeah, wearing all the time, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like his shtick on stage. And I made Dave Grohl wince.
Well, that's a pretty
And I was like, "It's cool, dude, it's fine." And he was like, "Oh my God." I thought it would be me doing that kind of shit to him. But again, that's it's just human. Yeah.
Well, we'll leave it at that. And I just want to say, thank you so much, obviously, for your time and everything. Thank you to your son for jumping in and saying
that. You want to edit? Did he come in with a bubble blower or something?
No, he
like
came
that?
In and he had a sing song on it. I'm definitely going to keep that one in. But
oh, yeah. No, keep that in. You know, like the little spicy bits of interviews and me like just going like, yeah, just keep the cute shit in. I want to look like Dave Grohl, like it's a family guy, you know.
I'm just going to edit it so you say that Dave Grohl is a wanker, and then we'll just leave it at
totally,
that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time, Tom. And obviously, good luck with the new
lovely.
Record.
I've really, I really enjoyed this. I mean, we're all buddies, and we've got a lot of mutual interests, so it's been easy.
Well,
take care, mate.
See you later.
Nice one.